NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between.
Hey friends, I'm Nikki Ogden, team member of the Happy Hour podcast. Due to an unexpected crisis, Jamie is going to be delaying her book publicity and tour. She's also going to take a break from social media, public appearances, and recording new shows at this time. We want to give her space to process, discern, and recover. We are so incredibly thankful for the community that Jamie has built here at the Happy Hour, and we know that you want to share your love and support for her. The best way that you can do that is by listening to this pre-recorded show and sharing this episode with a friend. We're so thankful for you.
Today on the show, Ronald Olivier sits down with me, and we talk about a book that he released in this past November 2023. It's called 27 Summers, My Journey to Freedom, Forgiveness, and Redemption During My Time in Angola Prison. And Ronnie ended up behind bars in Angola at the age of 18 for a crime he committed when he was 16 years old with a life sentence without the possibility of parole. So we talked through that. But more importantly on the show today, he tells stories of his time in Angola, but he also tells so many stories of God's faithfulness, God's protection, God's guidance. And I read his book in January of this year before I knew I was going to be interviewing him and loved every single second of it. In fact, I listened to it on Audible when I was walking, and it was so encouraging because although I'm assuming that a lot of you have not spent time behind bars, I'm also not assuming that some of you haven't, but I am confident that although we may have different stories and different circumstances, we have all felt the same things that Ronnie felt in the midst of his time spent in prison. We have things in our life that we have made poor choices over, or that we feel like God is absent from, or that we need God's guidance, or we need to really take on self-control. Those are things that happen to us all in our lives. And the way that Ronnie talks about God transforming his life is beautiful and encouraging. And so you're going to love the show. I want to remind you that if you love the show, share it with a friend. That is like the best thing you could possibly do. Well, the best thing you could do is go give us a rating or a view wherever you listen to podcasts, because it is super helpful. But also, man, just text the link to your girlfriend and say, hey, I listened to this show today. I think you're really going to love it. The number one way that people find out about the Happy Hour is through friends telling them. So we would really appreciate it. All right, you guys, here is my conversation with Ronnie. Ronnie, welcome to the Happy Hour.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. So glad to be here with you.
I'm excited to have you here. And sometimes it's a lot of times people ask me, like, how do you pick your guest and how do you know who's going to be on your show? And every once in a while, a book comes through my office. I mean, I get lots and lots of books coming through. A book comes to my office and it kind of stops me. And I go, huh, this seems like an interesting story. And so your book came through my office and it's titled 27 Summers. So I was like, okay, 27 summers of what? Like 27 summers of fun or 27 summers in Italy? I don't know. What is this book? And then your tagline is My Journey to Freedom, Forgiveness, and Redemption During My Time in Angola Prison. And I said, well, yes, please. I want to talk to Ronnie. And yes, so thank you for putting your story in a book. So let's start at the beginning of your story as far back as you want to go. You talk in your book a little bit about your childhood and growing up. And I would love for you just to set the stage. What did your childhood look like for you?
Yes. And so I'm a native of New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm sure you're going to get that accent there. But and I grew up in a poverty-stricken area, the inner city, New Orleans. And man, I can remember I stayed in the downtown area, the Seventh Ward. New Orleans is separating into wards. And we stayed in the Seventh Ward, and we moved from the Seventh Ward to the Eighth Ward. I can remember like it was yesterday. I used to stand on my porch and feed the birds. Mm-hmm. But something happened in the early 90s, late 80s, was the crack epidemic. It came through and completely destroyed our neighborhood. And so with drugs comes a lot of violence. And man, I can remember even the birds stopped coming out. Mm. That's how horrible it was. And also during that time, my dad, right before that, my dad made a transition to Florida, to Jacksonville, Florida. My dad was everything to me. That was my hero. And even though we didn't exactly stay in the same home, he always came, got me weekends and some holidays I spent with him, and definitely the summer. And there was one time that it was vice versa. I spent weekends with my mother one school year, stayed with him with the school year. And he moved to Jacksonville with his wife, which is beautiful. I have, I'm telling you, I got the best stepmother ever. And he moved there with her and my little sister. And man, I can remember, man, I just felt abandoned. I couldn't understand the transition. My little mind couldn't really comprehend that. And so I was very angry. It turned from hurt to anger, you know, and didn't really know why I was angry. I was a young kid. I'm in my teens, about 15 years old when he moved. And I'm like, man, he just left, you know. And so I grew up in a neighborhood where a lot of my friends, they didn't have dads, you know. And so that was kind of odd for you to have your dad around, you know, and especially the kind of dad I had. He was very intentional on his parents, real good father. And so a lot of my friends didn't have that. So that was common to see, you know, just my friends living in a home with their mother. Some of them didn't even know who their father was, never had even met their father. And so that was very common. And so I translated that in my mind to, okay, this was happening here. You know, this is what they do. This is what dads do. They leave, you know. So here it is. So I felt really abandoned. I was hurt. Like I said, it turned to anger and didn't really know I was angry because of that. You know, just in my later years, I connected to, you know. But when he left, and this happened in the neighborhoods, a lot of drugs, a lot of violence. And so all you saw was drug dealers. And I was like, okay, you know, the shiny rims, the shiny teeth, the gold, and all this things was very attractive to me. They always had money, all the girls. And so that's what I had aspired to be, you know. So I said, okay, so me and my friends started, you know, selling drugs, went from that, and we were stealing cars. We just, and everything negative that the environment offered us, you know, we did. And so the streets began to fall to me, you know. And so, and like any kid, you know, they do what they see rather than what you say, you know. And so that was just a part of my environment. So it was common to see someone shot. It was very common to hear the police sirens, you know. And so, you know, my mind got really accustomed to that. I thought that's how it was supposed to go, you know. And, that led me to a place in my life where I ended up in prison, charged with first-degree murder on Christmas Day in 91. And man, my life just took a turn right there.
Yeah, that was a life-changing Christmas Day for you. And I want you to tell everyone how old you were when you ended up in prison.
Yes, I was 16 years old. I was still in high school when I went to prison.
So you were 16 years old, which there's so much goodness in this book, Ronnie, and you became a Christian, and we're going to talk about that for sure. And there's also, you talk a little bit in here, just so people, before we get into the rest of your story, just to let people understand, I mean, I have teenage boys. My daughter's my youngest now. She's 16. I have, you know, two 18 and 20-year-old. And you talk a little bit in your book about how you were sentenced to life in prison as a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. And that is now not, is it illegal now for that to happen, or is it just not a press? Yeah, yes. It's illegal now, but it wasn't when you were sentenced to life in prison. And so as a 16-year-old, it's not only like you made some bad choices and some a hangout with your friends went wrong. Right. You now are given, you will spend the rest of your life in prison. Mm-hmm. How does a 16-year-old boy even comprehend that? Or how do you even take that in?
Amazingly, my stepmother, after the trial and the sentence, I was sentenced to life. I laid a rope, my dad and my stepmom, a long letter, about four pages. They couldn't find the first page, but they sent me, this was just a couple of months ago, they sent me the first three, the final three pages, you know, page two, three, and four. And it was amazing seeing, by this time I'm 17, seeing the mind of this 17-year-old processing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it really amazed me to see how much hope I had in spite of that. I said something like this in the letter, it's not over. I'm not giving up on God. And, you know, I don't believe I'm gonna spend the rest of my life here, you know. And that was and that stems from doing the trial. While I was on trial for first degree murder, I was facing the death penalty. And while the jury was deliberating, I was in the holding tank. I could still hear the cell door close when they put me in the holding tank. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and God led me to this cell and locked the door. I could hear it slam and the key, and I could hear his footsteps disappear, you know, as I was just there by myself. Prior to that moment, everything was like, it wasn't real to me. You know, I just knew I was getting out. I was going home. I was very optimistic. I'm going home, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at that moment, it got really real to me. It weighed heavy on me, and I began to realize. I was like, okay, 12 people are making a decision on my life, whether I live or die, and they really don't know anything about me. I was like, wow. And in that moment, I was like, man, they can actually come back, you know, with a decision for me to die by lethal injection. You know? And I was like, man, I don't want to die. And then I heard this so loud in my ear. And I believe it was God using my mother's voice. Years ago, she had told me, she was a praying woman. She said, if you're ever in trouble that I can't get you out of, you call on Jesus. And I got on my knees in that cell, and I cried out to him. I was really crying. I was scared. I didn't want to die. And this was my prayer. It was a real simple prayer. You know, a lot of people say you should make deals with God. I made a deal with him. You know, and my prayer was, Lord, if you don't let them kill me, I promise you, I serve you the rest of my life.
Wow.
And the prayer was so sincere. That I believe God received that. And for the first time in my life, I felt the peace of God. I was calm. There was an inward resolve. I didn't know what it was, but there was an inward resolve that, man, I was going to be okay. And, you know, later I found out it was his peace that rested on me. And so I was very calm, and I just knew I was going to be okay. And it came back with a guilty verdict of second degree murder which is the it's a lesser the responsive verdict, and it carried a mandatory life sentence without benefits of parole or probation.
Yeah. Which was better than where you were thinking that it could have gone with the death penalty. Which could they have given the death penalty to a 17-year-old?
Yes, at that time.
And they don't do that now, right?
Even at 16, no, it's illegal now. But they could have. And I was like, man. And so I like to say it like this: in that cell, in that holding tank, two things. I had got two life sentences. While the state was giving me a life sentence, he was giving me a life sentence. And their life sentence had no benefits.
And God's had all the benefits.
Man, he has so many benefits. He reminds us in our word, in his word, not to forget him. Forget not my benefits, you know.
Right.
There's so many. And so, man, I believe that they threw down their life sentence. God threw down his, and he swallowed up theirs. So that's why I'm here. And so in that moment, I was born again.
You were born again in that moment. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I was a different person in that moment. I still was doing some of the same things, still talked the same way. The difference was that I wasn't comfortable anymore with it. You know, I found out later I was being convicted, you know. And so I was like, what's going on here? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that moment happens and you end up getting the second degree murder charge and life in prison without the possibility of parole versus death, which was great. You end up in Angola, which I don't think you have to live in Louisiana you've heard the name Angola State Prison. It has a lot of reputation for being a very hard place. Yeah. And you show up there as a 17-year-old boy who has had a conversion experience. You want to do right, but you are still a 17-year-old boy who just got sent to one of the roughest prisons in the nation. What did that look like for you in those first months, those first years, as you're trying to figure out, how do I survive here? And survive in a way that is true to my character now that I've been changed, you know, I not wanting to get, because what people sometimes don't think is like, you can stay in gangs in prison. There's violence in prison. There's drugs in prison. Everything's in prison, believe it or not.
How
did you try to stay true to this new character that you were trying to form while being in a really hard situation?
Well, by the time I get to Angola, I'm 18 now. I looked like I was probably 11 or 12 years old, didn't have a string of hair in my face. I was 5'11", 131 pounds. I literally grew up in Angola. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm almost 6'2 now. So I literally grew there. And man, I can remember before going there, you go to Elaine Hunt's Correctional Center, and it's a transitional prison before they send you to different places. You have to go. This is a reception center. It sends you to that prison, and then they figure out where they're going to send you, depending on the type of time you have. And in Goli, you had to have at least 50 years to go there, 50 years and more. So mostly lifers was there. There guys with 500-something years, you know, which was literally life. While I was at Hunt, there was a guy who had been in Angola before, and he's having this conversation with me, telling me,
"Tony,
this is before Tony.
Oh, before Tony. Okay.
This before Tony. I meet Tony when I get to prison. But this guy here who was on the tier with me, I can't remember his name, but he was telling me little, and he said, "Man, if you go up there, man, he said, man, just." If you do these things, you're going to be okay. He said, man, don't get in anyone's business. Don't get involved with homosexuality. Don't get involved with gambling. Don't get involved with drugs. He said, don't play with no guys. And he said, man, they got a lot of programs up there. Man, graduate from everything you can graduate from, you know. And I took that. And that was my mindset. And so later I developed this plan that each year that I was there, I wanted a certificate to represent that year, you know, and just to do better. And they had a lot of self-help programs. But anyway, on my way there, when I finally get on the bus, and I'm headed to Angola. I'm going down the long snake road, like wondering what I done got myself into. And I remember thanking this because, you know, Angola was the bloodiest prison in the nation. And it was known, it preyed upon young guys who come there, you know. They would rape them, you know, and make them be their little slaves, so to speak, and do what they want them to do. And I had made up my mind on that road. I was like, man, I'm going through this gate of man. I'm going to leave out of man, whether it's in a box or if I walk out, you know. And so my mindset is to protect my manhood at all times. So I had that chip on my shoulder. And I think a lot of guys saw it and kind of stayed away. But I believe the real reason, when you get to the depth of it, man, God was protecting me. He was protected. It wasn't me. It was because I thought I was so bad. But he was protecting me. And he sent me around some guys who was willing to help me and not hurt me. And so I didn't know anything about discipleship. I needed someone to help me to walk this walk out, you know. And just like when a newborn baby comes out of womb, it don't come out looking like the little pretty girl of a baby, you know. It comes out with all type of afterbirth. It has to go through the process of being clean, being fed, and just totally independent. And so that was me, you know. The baby comes out looking like what it been through, and I look like what I've been through. And so it took at least about 2 years before it even looked like I was born again, you know.
Yeah.
And God just cleaning me up and helped me. And man, God blessed me to be around a great group of guys, man, who discipled me and just helped me along the way.
If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas: because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. You guys, in January of 2024, I made a commitment to myself. I wanted to get stronger, which meant I needed to get in the gym, which means I needed to move my body in different ways. You guys know I love to walk. Well, it's spring, and spring is the best time for us to start a new workout routine. It's our yearly collective warm-up, and Peloton is here for everyone's yearly warm-up. This is the best time to get into a good rhythm, to tap into your power, and build towards your summer you. I love my Peloton. It accommodates to my schedule with a variety of class links to choose from. I can choose a 30-minute class. I can choose a 45-minute class. If you only have 5 minutes, there's literally a class to get you moving your body in 5 minutes. Peloton has a range of class types fit for every goal and every mood. There are classes if you want to hear country music, if you want to hear rock, if you want to go back to the 80s. If you can't run, take a walking class. Need some grounding? Try yoga. If you want to level up, go for their Pilates or HIIT workouts. Here's what I love is that you can move at your own pace. And that is what I'm learning that my body needs right now. It needs to move at its own pace. Peloton makes the process easier with personalized recommendations and guided programs that take all the guesswork out of working out. You guys, we think about so many things during the day. Let's take the guesswork out. Let's jump right in and let's keep our fitness journey fresh every single day. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. I personally love a good 45-minute hip-hop class. It gets me moving. It gets me excited. It's my favorite genre of music. Just ask my kids. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com. It's really great, and you can see in reading your story and hearing you talk today, God's hand all over your life, and especially in a little bit, we'll talk about, like, obviously you're not in prison now, and so we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what you get to do with your life now, which is beautiful. You got your GED while you were in prison. Yes. You graduated from seminary. Yeah. You were getting those certificates left and right, and I feel like you telling that story was really this man saying, hey, keep yourself busy in the right way so that you don't get distracted with all the things that can bring you down.
Exactly.
And what a gift from him. One of the stories you tell in your book, and I'd love for you to talk about, is you talk about how God was changing you. And you talk about being discipled in this group of guys that you were under. And you said, you know, you'd stop cussing and stop doing all these things. But then you had this encounter when you were delivering food. I believe you were delivering food. And you had this encounter with another inmate. Can you tell us about that and how you – first of all, felt like, God, you are changing me because that's not how I would have normally reacted.
Right.
And then fast forward years later when you met him again.
Right. And so God, here it is. Man, he's doing some great things in my life. Man, I see myself changing and my thoughts, my mindset is changing. And so I get this job working as an audit and, you know, I'm bringing food to the guys in the cell block. So I bring this guy his tray, and he had got, he was on a diet. He used to get a diet tray, so he had to get the diet juice, you know. And I never forget, it was some tomato juice. And I put it in his bars, and I made a mistake and wasted. But I had a towel warm. I cleaned it up. Man, I'm sorry. I apologize. But the next day, amazingly, I did the same thing. I wasted. So he like, man, this you doing this on purpose. I said, man, I'm clean. I don't want waste and clean on purpose, you know. And so we had words. And my whole thing was, when God changed me, I'm good. Just, I was like, Lord, I wouldn't be able to handle anybody putting their hands on me. You know, that's off limits. I can deal with whatever you say, however disrespectful you are with, you know, talking to me, but just don't put your hands on me, you know. And so here it is. He's going back and forth, and he reached through the bars and slaps me. And man, it was like, and I caught his hand, you know, his hand outside the bars. And I got a split second to make a decision. I can hear God saying, let him go. But I can hear another voice saying, take his arm off the till with you. Mm-hmm. You know, try to, you know.
Break it.
And so, man, yeah. And I could have broke it easily. And I let him go. And when I let him go, man, the presence of God just, man, I believe he just rewarded me with his presence. Like, he just hugged me, you know, that I made that decision. I was like, wow. And I never forget, I went later, cleaned up and the tear, and was cleaning the shower and just praising God for that moment. And I really didn't want to work in the blocks, but that was the only job available. And a week or two later, they just gave me another job. I never put in for it. I ended up working in the library. You know, and I believe that was a reward from God of being faithful in that moment. Yeah, because normally you have to put in for a job before you even get. I hadn't put in for it.
Tell me what happened later.
So here it is, about a year or two later. You know, after Bible college, I'm on a missionary journey at another camp in the prison, and I'm making rounds, just talking to guys. That's my job, you know, the courage, talk to guys, minister. And I see him in a cell. And he's talking to me. He's, man, talking about scripture that was surprising, because this wasn't his character. He, man, cuss you out and do all type of things, was always angry. And I just saw his countenance was different. And I'm talking to him. I'm like, man, he don't even remember me, you know. And I was like, man, you remember me? He said, no, man. I said, man, that Hawk, man, you know, you reached through. And then it hit him. He said, oh, man. He said, man, He said, man, you the reason why I'm born again, because of how you responded. He said, I knew God was real. He said, man, you could have broke my arm. You had it. And I was like, wow. And I was like, man, was that slap worth it? Yes, it was for a soul, you know. And so you never know what God is doing, you know.
Yeah.
That's why he says, vengeance is mine. Says, let me repay. Mm-hmm. Let me take care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
it's
man.
So beautiful. Ronnie, in your book, you talk about, well, I saw them as two different missionary journeys. And what was was new to me was the fact that you actually were sent out as a quote-unquote missionary through the prison system.
Right.
And so you can explain that to me a little bit, because I read your book and I was still like, wow, I've never even heard of that. And that's crazy and amazing. And then also you spent maybe 18 months in a place that you never should have been or wanted to be, or all of the things above. And you called that your little mission field. And so let's talk a little bit about how God used you in those two specific ways while incarcerated to minister to other men who were also incarcerated.
Yes. So after you finished the Bible college, I went through the Bible college for 4 years and got a bachelor's degree in Christian ministry. And so after that, you become an inmate minister. That's your job. You know, they give you a little area where you're assigned to. You have to make rounds and just take care of those guys' spiritual needs. It's like an extension of the chaplain, you know, where the chaplains couldn't go or do time when they're home. We was there with them. But anyway, even after that, the ministers start stacking up. The Bible college went to producing all these ministers to, they had ministers in every area of the prison. Every crack of the prison, the gospel was preached, which is amazing. This 18,000 acres and several different camps just in gold. And so guys were just piling up on each other, ministers. And so I believe God gave the then warden, former warden, Warden Kane, a God idea, you know, to send out missionaries to other prisons in Louisiana. You know, these guys who graduate from Bible college, they are able to go to other prisons and assist chaplains and pastor churches and try to, you know, spread the word and do the same thing there and impact that environment. And so I decided to go to a prison in Cottonport, Louisiana, in the Boys Parish. And it was a big sacrifice because it's different. The rules are different because Angola is mostly lifers and things. They have the same rules, but they're a little slack. They don't enforce everything because guys have life, you know, as opposed to these other prisons. These guys are always going home, you know, regularly. And I had a life sentence, so the Secretary of Corrections had to sign off on wavering, letting me go there. Lifers couldn't even be there. And so I went there, and a sister chaplain and pastor of the church for about 3.5 years. One of the things I can remember, because they had a lot of guys with not as much time with guys, and then go about 10, 11, 12 years, and some guys were bored out of court. Didn't have a chance to get back in court, and God put on my heart to do this prayer meeting. And this is not even in the book. Maybe the next book. Maybe part
good.
Two. And so God led me to do a prayer meeting, and I put out a flyer in all the dorms, you know, inviting people to come pray, you know, to bring all their legal work and their master prison records to the altar. There was another court to decide.
Wow.
You know, that was higher than the courts of the land. And there was another judge greater than the judges in the land. And man, amazing the response. You know, people don't normally come to prayer meetings. That'd be your shortest services, you know. Man, the chapel was packed with hundreds, and guys brought their legal work. It was all over the altar. Nothing but paperwork. And I had scriptures all around the wall where guys can walk around and pray and just declare those scriptures of freedom. And, man, we prayed and God, I'm talking about the presence of God came in that building. And just, man, just ministered to us. And man, and I believe that's one of the reasons why I'm home. I brought it before the judge, and he did some things. And so afterwards, a lot of guys went to going home. Some guys had nothing in church, just miraculously, and they stopped it by the chapel on the way out. Man, I'm gone, man. I'm gone. And so, man, that was amazing. We did a lot of great things there. We had services where we had to turn people around because we had no room. And kind of we convinced the ward that to help us to add on to the chapel where we can enlarge it, where we would. And we did that. It was just a beautiful moment of ministry there. Met a chaplain there, Chaplain Draper, Leslie Draper. I talk about him in the book. He also was the pastor of a church, senior pastor of a church. And amazingly, he got the ward. I don't know how he did it. It was nothing but God. To agree for me and my assistant pastor who came from Angola also, who was with me, to go to his church, you know, with no restraints, you know. And we have life sentences. So that was my first time out of the prison without any type of restraints. And amazingly, later I come home, I end up being a part of that church and ministry. Living in that town, and by this time he was the mayor, still is. He's in his second term as the mayor of that town. And man, this God just was connecting and just putting people in my life, man.
God really did. You know, you talk about how God was connecting you with the people who were going to disciple you and really, really kind of guiding your path. And he really did. You had so much truth that was happening there. In your book, you write, in one part, you say that you didn't want to wait until you're released to start living. You said, just because I'm locked up doesn't mean I can't experience all of life to its abundance. And you stayed true to that. I want to talk about that second time that I mentioned that you viewed your position as a missionary. And I'll tell you, Ronnie, as I listened to your book on Audible and I was listening to it, this part of your story, it made me very, very sad. I felt very sad for you because you're going to tell the story, but I'll tell how I was feeling. Yeah. I felt as though you were done wrong. And I know we just met in person now and I was reading your book, but I just felt like, gosh, he's been doing so many amazing things within the prison. He is a missionary. The warden let him go to the church, like all these things. And I just, so tell the story so I don't keep telling you how it made me feel, because you lived it.
And so here it is. After about 3.5 years, I come back off the missionary journey to go back to Angola. And man, God did a lot. I grew and matured a lot in leadership there. And God did some great things there. And I get back to Angola, and probably about a month later, I end up at Camp J. This is the prison inside of prison. This is the inner prison. This is where you go when you can't follow the rules in the prison, and it have to be something very drastic, like you for aggravated fight, you have stabbed someone or got caught with a lot of drugs or things like that. They send you to Camp J baths, and you stay there 23 hours in the cell a day. And I found myself there for something I didn't do, didn't know anything about it. And the program actually lasts for 6 months, you know, but they kept me there 18 months. And it was, there are a lot of wards that are coming past and see me. Oh, I know they got you wrong. Well, they try to get me out, but they find out each time somebody see me and try to get me out, they go into my jacket. They had red flagged me. The head warden, which is Ward Burl Kane, had flagged me saying that I cannot leave Camp J without his permission. And so they kept me there 18 months in a, what, 6x9 cell, 23 hours a day. And I was like, wow. But amazingly, I love to tell a story like this, man. A lot of people are like, man, how did you do that? How was you able to even stay sane? They had another man in the cell with me. And his name is Jesus. Mm. I'm telling you, he will fill that cell with his presence. A lot of people are guys who was on the tier. Thought I was going crazy. I was just as happy and content. Mm. And he was ministering to me. And so I said, okay, I'm going to just use this as my missionary field. You know, hey, he got me here for a purpose. I had came to terms of this in that cell, that my life wasn't in the hands of the system or people, that it was in the hands of God. Mm. And that if I'm in this place at this time, man, God has a purpose for it. Mm. And so I believe that, man, in every tragedy, there are treasures. You just got to find them. And so I went to treasure hunt, and I turned it into a mission field and purpose in my heart that everybody that comes on that tier will hear the gospel. Mm. And as a result of that, three men were saved, and several men was renewed their relationship with God, and countless people was encouraged.
Yeah. You know? I found that story of yours to be super encouraging. And, you know, probably the majority of my listeners have probably not spent time behind bars. But we all have had times in our life where we're in circumstances that we didn't choose, or we're in circumstances that are uncomfortable, or we're in a place where we think, God, is this how it's going to be? And I found that story in particular, Ronnie, that you share in your book so encouraging, because you, although you're incarcerated, you end up in this inner part, you know, Camp J, that was for the quote unquote, you know, terrible, you can't be rehabilitated, and you didn't deserve to be there. And yet at the same time, you said, I will do whatever you want here with me, God. And I love, there's a line in the book, you said, my freedom wasn't in, you know, Warden Kane's hands.
That's right.
You had that freedom already. And I found that really encouraging. Now let's skip to a little part and talk about the fact that you are not currently behind bars. You were released from Angola. And one of the things that was really important to you, I don't know when this became important to you, but there was a moment you talk about in the book where you wanted to get in contact with your victim's mother. And either illegal or not right, probably illegal for you to contact her. Yeah, right. Illegal for because of your case to contact her. And so you had someone help me. But I want you to talk about when you are up for parole, which you're going to, you had to show them and prove to them that you had been rehabilitated and you're able to function in society, all the things that the parole board is looking for. You have a face-to-face conversation with your victim's mother. Can you talk about that?
Right. Let me back up a little. In 2012, and I believe this was, man, nothing but God. In 2012, the United States Supreme Court came down with a ruling in Miller versus Alabama that said it was unconstitutional to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence. It said it violated our Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment, and that a juvenile should have some type of meaningful opportunity for freedom. Said juveniles are more likely to be rehabilitated than adults. And it went into the science of the brain, you know, because of the frontal lobe of the brain is not fully developed. It's the part of the brain that helps you appreciate risk and consequence. That's why juveniles do some crazy things without thinking. And
That's right.
Yeah, we all can think of some things, probably not as drastic as what I've done. But and so here it is. They come down with this ruling. And man, I'm like, wow, I'll never forget. I danced that day. I saw it on CNN and because we was following it. But anyway, that ruling comes down and later I get parole eligibility. But before I get parole eligibility, because of the ruling, the sentence at that time that I had, the life sentence without benefits of parole or probation, was illegal. You know, so I filed an illegal sentence claiming to the courts, you know, based upon Miller versus Alabama, and they grant the hearing. And so I'm going to the hearing for them to re-sentence me now, you know. And when I get there, I never forget my lawyers was there, and they kind of really spooky and man, got some bad news. I'm like, what's going on? He said, the victim showed up. The victim's sister. And I said, yeah. I said, and I noticed when I got to the court, there was this lady on the front row, you know, across from me that just kept staring at me. She just had this stare, and I'm looking at her, and I didn't want to seem more intimidated than I did because I'm handcuffed and shackled. So I'm glancing and then looking out my peripheral, and she was just still staring. I'm like, man, she looks kind of familiar. And so when he said that, the sister, the victim, then it hit me. I said, oh, okay. I said, that's not his sister. I said, that's his mother. Because out of everyone in the courtroom, I remembered her face. Mm. Her. And so when I developed a prayer life, God began to change it. I prayed for her more than I prayed for anybody. I could still see her tears on the stand because I had killed her son. And I always had this longing to have some type of, you know, dialogue with her where I could tell her how sorry I was. And I prayed for her. I used to see these little reconciliation things on TV and this man crying long for that, you know. And so talking to her and asking her for forgiveness was the first on my lip. That was above me getting home. Mm. That's how important that was. And so I saw an opportunity there. I said, okay. I said, look, try to see if I can have a dialogue with her. I would like to talk to her. So he talks to the DA. The DA go talk to her. He come back and says, she don't want to talk to you. Said, whatever she says, she's going to say it on the stand. I was like, whoa, okay. And so just so happened, the hearing was set back to the following month. And so I had 30 days to do some more praying. Mm-hmm. And I did some praying. And amazingly, man, only God get the glory for it, man. When I went back into the court, she requested to talk to me before the hearing. And so here it is. I'm on the bench. They bring her on the bench behind me. The DA sits next to her. And I turn around. And this is the hardest conversation I have ever had in my life. And it's very emotional to talk about it. But I turn around and I look in her eyes and I really break the silence. I say, ma'am, I take full responsibility for the death of your son, you know. And when I said that, prior to that, she was her arms were folded tight. And when I said that, her arms released and she leaned into me. Mm. She leaned towards me. And I said, ma'am, I said, I have absolutely no excuse. I said, I just ask that you forgive me. You know, it was very senseless, foolish, very reckless decision I made that day. You know, I said, I was a kid. And I said, I take full responsibility. I just pray that you can find it in your heart somewhere to forgive me. And she said, by this time, while we're talking and having this conversation, both of us are crying. Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't hate you. And she said, man, I forgive you. And when she said that, oh, man, it was like, even though I was still handcuffed and shackled, I felt them come off of me. It was a freedom that took place. And I can see it freed her also. Mm-hmm. When she did it, it was for both of us. And it was like, it didn't even matter what happened in the court. Now, you know, this was it. This is the pinnacle here. You know, it didn't even matter. And she said this, she said, I believe you deserve a second chance. And when she got on the stand, she echoed what she said in private. And man, it just was an amazing moment in my life, man, to be forgiven of something that magnitude, you know?
Yeah.
And so to this day, that helps me. I'm so easy to forgive people, you know, and love people. The Bible says, man, those who've been forgiven much, man, they love much. Mm. I embody that scripture, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, man, it's a beautiful thing. I can remember in that cell, I used to pray. I was praying one day and asking God to get me out of the cell, get me out of prison. And I can remember him revealing to me my heart. He showed me my heart as a cell block. And he said this here. He said, "You want me to release you from prison, but you don't want to release those people you got in your heart." Mm. And from that moment, I started to see how forgiveness, man, is really for you. You know, you think it's for somebody else, mm-hmm. and you holding them. But when I let them out, of my cell, he let me out of mine.
Mm. That is so beautiful. What year was that, Ronnie, that you were paroled?
I was paroled in 2018, November the 30th. Yep. In fact, I went on parole. It was November the 8th and November the 30th. I was released. Yes,
well,
ma'am.
What a beautiful. Have you, since that conversation with your victim's mom, have you and her kept in contact?
No, I wish we had. And mm-hmm. same thing. The law prohibits me from reaching out to her. You know, and that's what a lot of, and I don't, that's not the law across the United States, just certain states, it prohibits you. And a lot of victims, I've saw a lot of parole hearings where they say he never even tried to say he was sorry. Mm-hmm. Not really. No, they can't. They cannot.
Yeah.
And they can get in trouble for that. You know?
Yeah.
So...
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
"I'm okay,"
when the truth is,
"I don't want my problems to burden anyone,"
or you say,
"Hang it in there,"
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
After that parole, you have a very full and exciting life now. Tell everybody you are married. You got a baby. Tell everybody what's going on in your world.
Yeah. And so I'm married. When you read the book 27 something, you're going to read about the most beautiful love story ever.
It's true.
And so I got married in April of 2019, and we later had a son in 2020. He just made 4 years old on the 17th mm-hmm. of January. And man, such a beautiful kid. Man, he's a ball of joy. The former warden came, ended up calling me to become, this is amazing, to become the director of chaplaincy at Mississippi State Penitentiary. You know, mm-hmm. and I accepted that job. I was responsible for hiring all the chaplains in Mississippi prison. They had to come to me mm-hmm. and be trained, and then I sent them out to other places. And man, just a beautiful experience. How God turned it around. You know, mm-hmm. I was still on parole and working in the prison. That just mm-hmm. don't happen. It's a miracle. If you know anything about corrections or dealt with it, you know. Man, you can understand the weight of what I'm talking about. This doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I used to have to go visit my parole officer. I'm in the state vehicle with the same emblem on the side that he has when I pull up, and we had the same
ID. That is interesting. Yeah.
Man, I'm talking insane.
Yep.
And so, man, an amazing experience. Just last year in April, I made a transition from there. I'm in Baton Rouge now, and I'm working with the Louisiana Parole Project. We help We help guys make a transition from home, from prison to home. With wraparound services, we give them housing, clothing, food, help them get all the IDs, birth certificate, all the important documents, and help them get jobs. And just give them a very good start. This program has been in operation in 2016, and we have had over 500, nearly about 600 clients we have helped, and we have a less than 2% recidivism rate. In layman's terms, that means if somebody comes through our program, it's more than likely that they'll never go to prison again.
That's so good.
You know, and so most of the guys who are on work for the program is about 28, 29 employees. And probably about 85% of us are formerly incarcerated persons. Mm. And so we know what it takes to move. And so God just uses our experience to help them. And it's just a beautiful thing.
It's so beautiful. The first time I met the other man who's been on the show who was formerly incarcerated, he was in San Quentin in California. And I went with my friend Bob to inside the prison to see the work that they were doing. And I met this man named Brandon, and I thought he was just on the tour with the group that we were on. And we went in and we were having some programs, and I was asking him, I was like, Brandon, how did you get connected with this ministry? And he's like, well, I used to be incarcerated here. And I was like, what? Beautiful. And he told me that he had not even been out that long. And, you know, my question to him was, what does it feel like to be on the outside with freedom, mm-hmm. walking in and able to leave? And so I think I'd love to hear from you. What does it feel like for you to have spent 27 years as an incarcerated man, and now you get to minister to other men who are in your same shoes, but you get to go home to your wife and go home to your son, and you have all these freedoms. What does that feel like?
It's beautiful, especially when I was in Mississippi, in Mississippi State Penitentiary, working there. You can eat lunch there. They had a restaurant on the grounds where you can go, but I always went out the gate just because I can, just to eat lunch.
Yeah.
and it just was amazing. There's sometimes, in some instances, I had to transport inmates back to their dormitories. I get them in a vehicle. And I'm like, man, it's just yesterday I was in the back of the vehicle. Now I'm driving. There are times I had to pull over with tears in my eyes, just being so grateful. It just helps you appreciate life better. You never really understand and really grasp freedom until it's been taken from you. And so I enjoy the most simplest things, like pumping gas. I can remember I used to be in a patrol, being transported somewhere with handcuffs and shackles, and they stop at a red light and I see someone just, man, pumping gas. I'd be like, God, that's what I want to do. And every time I think about that, and I can remember walking the yards in the prison and looking at planes in the sky, wondering where they was going and who was on it. And I always finish with this. I say, Lord, I'm going to be up there one day. And every time I fly different places a lot, I think about that. And it just helps. Mm-hmm. It reminds me to be thankful and grateful, man. A lot of people, including my wife, think I'm crazy about this. I enjoy being stuck in traffic. while other people mad and pulling out their head, I'm smiling, because I was stuck in traffic for 27 years.
Yeah.
Bumper to bumper, and God delivered me. So this is nothing. I love this.
I'll sit here all day long because I'm not sitting in Angola behind bars. Yeah. Well, Ronnie, this book of yours, I highly recommend it. You guys pick it up. 27 Summers, My Journey to Freedom, Forgiveness, and Redemption During My Time in Angola Prison. And I love that the tagline says, freedom, forgiveness, and redemption during your time in Angola Prison. And God did so many good works in your life. And so, thank you so much for coming on the Happy Hour. I really appreciate
it. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me. Don't tell me what God won't do.
That's exactly right. That's what you say. Don't tell me what God won't do, because he will.
He'll do it. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Friends, I hope you loved my conversation with Ronnie. I just keep saying this, but I want you to go read his book. I love memoirs. It reads like a memoir. Talks about his time incarcerated and all the things that God did. It's really, really good. So go check it out, 27 Summers. But I want to also point you to a couple other episodes. If you're interested in other conversations that we have had on this podcast about incarceration or forgiveness, let me tell you about some other ones. My friend Brandon Terrell came on the Happy Hour. He came on in May of 2023. In fact, his episode is episode 588. If you want to go back and listen to his story, I referenced him in this episode. Love Brandon and his wife, Lacey. And in fact, Lacey came on as well in episode 589. Great episodes to go look back. And in December, I had my friend Kent Whitaker sit down. And Kent was on the other side of this incarcerated life. In fact, one of his sons is incarcerated right now for orchestrating the murder of his other son. And so Kent has lived a life where he had to choose forgiveness and he had to walk through sorrow and grief at the same time of forgiving his other son. And so that is a really great episode. It came out in December. Go back and listen to that one as well. And then lastly, in May of last year as well, we also had Fox and Rob Rich on the show, who also spent time incarcerated in the state of Louisiana, and that was from May of 2023. So there's some more shows if you're like, I want to go hear other people on the Happy Hour who have talked about their life behind bars as incarcerated people, or on the other side of having to forgive people for something that happened to their family member, like my friend Kent Whitaker did. You guys, thank you for listening. I don't take it lightly. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivey, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell, and the show is edited by Jason Talley.
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay,
when the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone,
or you say,
hang it in there,
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.